This week's Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Audible, and you can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get started with a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we slaughter the Special Olympics. I'm your host, Bob Mackey, that guy who always wears a shirt, and this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of the Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Hey, it's Henry Gilbert, and I thought I'd get in shape by drinking milkshake.
And who else?
Chris Ray J. Antista.
Oh, we're going to learn all about Ray J. Johnson in this episode, which is Krusty Gets Canceled.
Gabble!
And it
is. He'll tell us what to do.
Yes. We learn from his teachings.
Very happy. And in the middle of the show, hey, I know some of you skipped the breaks. We got something very special from our buddy Eric Nagel of It's Eric Nagel on SiriusXM.
Good previous
thank
guest.
Thank you so much, Eric. Yeah.
He gave us quite a treat, which you will hear in the break. You just got to listen to that break.
Incredibly special and unprecedented.
Yes.
First of its kind.
You will not believe who you will hear.
We are not overestimating.
Yes.
It's not fake and it is real.
Krusty Gets Canceled aired on May 13th, 1993, and Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-life history.
This because the brand new Pentium chip has spawned a line of new PCs. It's announced that Dan Rather will be joined by co-anchor Connie Chun, and apropos of this episode, Bette Midler announces her first world tour in over a decade.
Wow,
that's awesome. And now Rather is just retired and
Rather was ridden out of office by a witch hunt.
Yes, that is true.
But now he tweets a lot
now
about things.
He is the best face.
Look, Facebook. Right.
Hey, we're going to cool it on the politics, people. But if you're into that, follow Dan Rather. He's America's dad.
Yes.
He has the best Facebook page.
Now he's right America's now. Grandpa, I think. But
I'll just say this really quickly. Some people took exception to a thing I said last episode. I apologize, and I'm sorry about that. But if you want to see my full thing about it, it's on the webpage for last week's episode in the comments. So, but again, sorry.
If you got to go, you got to go. That was an offhand remark. There's going to be many of them. You're not always going to disagree with them.
And
everybody's very sensitive, and we understand that, so we're going to try and rate it.
These are dark times, and I can't believe I was only that unhappy on Inauguration Day compared to now how unhappy I feel. And we're recording this the Monday before it. Whatever. I don't want to mark this.
Do it again.
Forever. Hey, but yeah, that was the top.
How about this? Here's a clip from our latest president.
That ought to hold a little SOBs.
Oh, man.
Here you go.
He's doomed now. Yes.
So I want to tell you guys a little story about this episode. So Krusty Gets Canceled is one of my favorites.
Dude,
actually,
it's really good.
It is really good. Yeah. But after watching it, it's not in my top five anymore, but I did really love it. But it is a personal favorite of mine because my Uncle Eric knew I was a huge Simpsons fan. He also is. He's my favorite uncle because he's the one most like me on my mom's side, who is like on my dad's side.
Is he a little younger than your dad?
Only slightly, But so on my dad's side, it's just like a bunch of hunters and good old boys on that side, and I just have nothing in common with them except for video games. They did play video games with me. But on my mom's side, my Uncle Eric loved comic books, loves the Simpsons, and like him and his wife always get all these cool Simpson things. But he got me on a trip to LA a Simpsons script.
Whoa.
A four-reel Simpsons script that was being sold at a convention, and it was for this episode.
Wow.
I didn't hear about this.
And I've been saving it for this very episode.
Oh, my God, Henry, you and diabolical.
I lost the script a long time ago, but I committed it. I memorized so much of it.
Was it the table read script?
It's not this episode in a lot of ways. So on the commentary, they talk about, celebrities dropped out. We wanted to get more celebrities. We wanted to get person X, person Y. And so that means the script also went through a lot of drafts where they have to pull in and out celebrities. And in this draft of it, it was not the Red Hot Chili Peppers. I believe it was Rolling Stones in it. But the one I remember so well is there's an entire subplot that one of the celebrities has to move in with the Simpsons.
Oh.
And it's Bill Murray in this one.
Whoa.
And he's a total,
of course he said no.
And he's a total mooch who is taking everything from them. And the joke of Homer opening, trying to open up the couch and tearing the couch apart, that was for Bill Murray in this script.
Wow.
And he's constantly eating their food, which there's no jokes about that in this episode. And there's even the line at the end, I remember this crystal clear, Homer is talking with Bill Murray at the party at the end, and Bill Murray's like, hey, it all worked out, right, Homer? And you don't mind if I stay a little bit longer? And Homer says, you're wearing my pants. And then Bill Murray runs away in classic Simpson style. And I think that you're wearing my blank joke definitely got reused. It got reused. I checked it on Frinkiac. The closest thing I could find was it got reused in the next season when Homer and Skinner are together.
Right, in being sequestered, right?
Sequestered.
So is it only now we know how foolish it is to write anything for Bill Murray and expect him to show up?
Yes, I guess we didn't know that before. But not to get too far ahead of ourselves, that was going to be Carson's character.
Yeah, so there's so from reading that script, it also let me know just how much they traded around jokes of, okay, take out that celebrity, put in this one, and just cycle through it. And that's how, that Carson didn't want to be a mooch, so then they give the mooch jokes to Bill Murray, and then Bill Murray drops out, and then they're just like, okay, Krusty stays with them, and they just kind of insert it into it.
You're right. That sequence is really short.
It
really is.
This episode flies so fast. Yeah. Watching it yesterday, I'm like, no scene lasts more than 10 seconds. Yeah. This might be the most fast-paced episode.
Yeah.
It's actually paced like a Halloween episode because they have so much content, so many characters to cram into this, and just one solid story to tell throughout.
If you have a good memory of it, it'll feel like an hour-long or movie-length episode because there's so many things that happen.
But it was amazing to read that script. I wish I kept track of it. I think because I was like a dumb teen who was like, I'll just tear through this or whatever.
Drawing your Spider-Man Halloween costumes.
The staple fell out of it. And I was like, I put it back together. It's just a pile of pages. But now I see it's a document that just shows you how much one episode can change before you see it on TV.
It's crazy. They sold scripts at the studio.
I wonder if somebody just was like selling it illegally at there. I think you're not allowed to sell scripts.
You can find them at lots of conventions and bookstores in Hollywood and stuff like that. Just these loose table read scripts.
Yeah.
Because once they're done with them, they just get rid of them. So they give them to fans.
But for animation, it's not the same as a shooting script for a live action thing.
They
change so much.
So one thing I wanted to mention in this episode is they've been casually creeping towards making Krusty into Johnny Carson, making his show into the Tonight Show. In this episode, he is Johnny Carson, and his show is the Tonight Show. I think in I Love Lisa, his 29th anniversary special, they were setting him up to be a talk show host. Mm. Now it's like, who is Krusty? Why do kids like his show? Why does he know Bette Midler so well? I mean, it doesn't make any sense unless you know about Johnny Carson and know who they're directly mirroring. And Johnny Carson basically quit his show or retired the year prior, like almost a year prior
to
this
huge
episode.
Waves.
Yeah.
He said he retired. And so this is...
He retired in like his, like, what was it, like 39th or like 42nd anniversary? Like, didn't even make
it was
a cool
right
number.
After 30.
Yeah.
Like, because... Everybody, as I recall, everybody was we just did your 30th anniversary. And they're like, well, it's now 32.
Well, that movie, The Late Show, points out that...
The Late Shift,
a lot of slander was put in the paper to call Johnny old, hack, and washed up, even though he didn't have any intention of retiring. But all of a sudden, there was critical pressure for him to retire, even though his ratings weren't bad.
Yeah, I think he said, once they start making fun of you, that's when you quit, because you're a joke.
Yeah, that's true. And
but those were planted by Jay Leno's manager, according to The Late Shift.
That Kathy Bates. she's
Bates.
So evil. I love The Late Shift.
It's really good.
I actually was going to talk about it later in this one. But this was the full transformation of him into Johnny Carson, even meeting Johnny Carson, though, to show how different he is. But also, Gene and Reese especially, when I've heard him on non-commentary tracks... Mm-hmm. Fucking hates Johnny Carson.
Yes.
He hated everything. He hated all his time working on him. I don't want to put words in his mouth, but if you listen to him like on the Gilbert Gottfried podcast, other podcasts, he said hated every minute working on Carson. He was a jerk who fired writers for no good reason, and he didn't get why jokes were funny. And every bit that you like of Carson, he just stole from somebody else.
Yeah, and they worked on the show for maybe 18 months and met him twice, maybe two or three times.
And so also when you see the Krusty has. There's jokes in here of like Krusty, it's a recurring gag where Krusty says, I got to steal that bit. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering now if that is just them saying, like, yeah, Johnny stole everybody's bits. Like,
I've always thought Krusty is the stand-in for any kind of media entertainment person mm-hmm. that Springfield needs to tell a joke.
It really, he's really just a character that can embody any old Hollywood story, yes. yeah. any old TV story. But mm-hmm. in this episode, he's specifically a Johnny Carson figure.
Except I think that's because, when he's Elvis. He's yeah. Elvis also.
He's Elvis briefly.
But yeah. I think that's because they needed a recent template for someone moving on and getting
yeah,
canceled.
Like basically any celebrity scandal can be embodied by Krusty in some way
yeah,
throughout the course of the series.
And it's so weird because like on the surface it's about a warring kid show. Yeah, warring kid shows.
But and it's not really even on a kid show in yeah. this episode. It's so strange.
It is yeah. on 4 o'clock and kids yeah. watch it. So this was also meant as a sequel of sorts to their softball episode.
Oh, yeah.
And recorded in the same way. They're just like, they recorded all those MLB stars whenever they came into town from LA, but they were planning it for a really long time. So I think they were also like, well, let's just give us extra time to record every celebrity we can get. They tried to get a president. They couldn't. They tried to get yeah. a living president. They couldn't. They said the closest they got was actually Reagan, because Reagan was friends with Elizabeth Taylor. And she just old Hollywood buddies.
What a world, Jesus!
And like, so she tried to hook them up, but they said that Reagan did send them a letter of mm-hmm. like, sorry, I can't do it. But it was like from Reagan's personal pen, and John Swartzwelder prized it so highly. and so they couldn't get that. People dropped out, like Bill Murray, the Rolling Stones, mm-hmm. other famous people who weren't in the draft in mind. And they had to like get it a lot more modular than it was, or they had to also reuse do voice actors on this.
I totally forgot about this because the opening is them watching television Springfield Squares.
Yes, Springfield Squares.
Rainier Wolfcastle to block.
Oh, Rainier Wolfcastle, star of McBain in the upcoming film Help, My Son is a Nerd.
My son returns from a fancy East Coast college, and I'm horrified to find he's a nerd.
I'm laughing already.
It's not a comedy.
I thought that had Barry White in it, but like White's in there for like. Well, I thought the clip did, but
oh, okay.
He's in there for like 4 seconds. Apparently, they threw him in here.
Yeah, they go up to a square.
I wonder if they paid him twice for that.
I think they have to.
They'd have to.
Yeah, with two episodes.
To be a SAG show, they'd have to do that.
Well, this whole joke revolves around Charlie Weaver, who is a character this is such an old Lost Time reference.
First off, you need to know what Hollywood Squares is.
Oh God,
they did have the Whoopi Goldberg show.
That's almost 20 years old.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah,
is that a Laser Time forums username? Whoopi Goldberg.
So they did have that show, but this joke predates the revival of it.
This is the 70s.
Mocking the 70s one, which is why Wally Cox is in there, even though he had been dead since 73. He's in Springfield Squares.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Weaver, so he was played by an actor named Cliff Arquette. He started on the Jack Parr version of The Tonight Show, playing this very folksy character with a straw hat, suspenders, and these like horn-rimmed glasses. And this is who they're making fun of because he came back in the 70s. He was like on the Tonight Show in the 50s, and he came back in the 70s on the Hollywood Squares. And that's, he was always center square, I guess, always on the show.
And he refused to leave his square. Yeah. But his steadfastness to not leave a natural disaster is actually a parody of a real-life tragedy.
Oh, my God.
In 1980, Mount St. Helens exploded. Yeah. It was a volcano in America, though it was just a mountain. And then occasionally this will happen where mountains become volcanoes. Mm-hmm. And people were evacuating. But one man, Harry R. Truman, not to be confused with the president.
No relation.
Held up a newspaper and refused to leave.
He was he lived on the Spirit Lake Lodge, and he said he would never move. He was like, I'm not moving. I'm west of the mountain. I'm north of the mountain. Not going to affect me. I'm not moving. And he didn't make it. Everything's gone. And so this is a clip about him and a song written in tribute to Harry R. Truman.
I ain't afraid of no roller coaster.
Weeks and weeks of anticipation, waiting for the mountain to blow. But old Harry Truman made his declaration. No way in hell was he gonna go. If I leave my home, I'd die in a week. This mountain's where I buried my wife.
Yes, so
he had about a week to live anyways.
I mean, they make a good point. He's like, he was an 83-year-old man. What, he was going to leave his home and then, what, live 3 more years?
That song written like 15 years beforehand?
So this reference is so deep, we're looking at the fossil record of it now.
Yeah. And a carbon dated on
it. And now you get it, right? I hope.
And Homer's, I love the meanness of Homer's, well, he's dead now.
Yeah, so, and they start cackling, yeah.
Also, a first in that clip, McBain had never been identified by his actor name to that point. That was the first Rainier Wolfcastle.
Yeah. Spelled out and everything.
So we also may have entered the time of McBain is not a character anymore on the show because the McBain film exists. And they were told by Fox Legal they couldn't do it.
Well, there is that joke, magic ticket my ass McBain in the next season.
Yeah, people still call him McBain, but he exists in the world as Rainier Wolfcastle.
True, there are no more McBain movies being made in this world.
No more Mendoza.
It is true, though. We are two episodes away from Late Night with McBain.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe you're all homosexuals, too.
And we played this early in the show, but...
Gabble!
I was trying to think... I felt like there was a lot of analogs to that. Like something marketed, but they wouldn't tell you what it was for like what felt like weeks at a time.
Well, on the commentary, I think Al Jean says this all comes from John Swartzwelder, who worked in ads for a long time. Mm-hmm. So he knew the strategies to get people excited about something without them really knowing what it was. So maybe this is something that he had a hand in. Maybe he knew about ad campaigns that did the same thing.
The only one I can think of off the top of my head, sadly, is like on this date, McDonald's grows up. And for a month, there was like these videos like, security cam footage of Ronald McDonald walking on golf courses and like washing his car
for the big
the Arch Deluxe. It was eventually revealed to be the burger with the grown up taste, the Arch Deluxe, which of course is going to let people down if you're like teasing something as a secret. I just don't see that happen at all anymore.
It felt like a very 90s tease.
Sorry, video games do that still, but
well,
like,
that's what felt like.
That's true. Yeah, they do.
That's what felt like modern day coverage of pop culture things in that. Homer's reading a newspaper like, who is Gabbo? And Lisa's just like, they're not giving you much to go on, Dad. Yeah. And it was like, maybe I'm just identifying that as somebody who has to write an article out of nothing for a tease. But it's just like, that newspaper was the same deal. Like, well, we know the title of Star Wars The Last Jedi. What could this mean?
But who is The Last Jedi?
I've got to get to 400 words.
This is why we have... Well, Jedi is plural, man. Relax. Anyway,
that's true.
Anyway, like that, I'm pretty sure there was something specific that happened just like this, but it's on the tip of my tongue. It's hard to Google. I couldn't figure it out, but that's why we have comments. LaserTimePodcast.com.
Yell at us in the comments.
There's a great sequence of the whole, like, all of Springfield. And that's why I love this episode. It gives, like, all the characters of Springfield a moment. Mm-hmm. And great one from Reverend Lovejoy.
Everyone is saying gabble this and gabble that. But no one is saying worship this and Jericho that.
Was this about Gabbo?
Was this about Gabbo?
Gabbo is coming.
That Burns. It was a bit of an easy Burns joke. They had better this season. Just like you see that Gabbo is coming, which almost that seems like. Burns is so old, he should be like that harlot Garbo. Yeah. She's not as good as the person
upstart.
That young strumpet.
She's no Mary Pickford.
There you go.
Hey, I wish I was there. Yeah. But finally, Gabbo is introduced.
I can't believe it. Our first glimpse of Gabbo.
He'll tell us what to do.
Hello, I'm Gabbo.
And I'm Arthur Crandall.
That's easy for you to say. You don't have a hand up, you tuchus. Oi, hey!
Oh, Gabbo, you'll say anything. And you can watch us every afternoon at 4.
That's the same time as Krusty the Clown.
Uh-oh. That cute little character could take America by storm. All he needs is a hook.
I'm a bad widow boy.
Ay, caramba!
Okay, wait a minute. I am dying to explore Gabbo. We have to go to a break real fast. We got a special treat for you, and we're going to go out with a full Gabbo song, so enjoy that. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
You gotta like me, you gotta love me, cause I can do most anything. I can do the holly golly. I can imitate Vince Scully.
Let's take time out from this triple play to talk about Farmy Dan's pure pork sausage.
I'll give out shiny dimes. I'll travel back in time.
You're gonna like him. You're gonna love him. It's the greatest show in town.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you so much, Talking Simpsons listeners, for listening to this season 4 finale of Talking Simpsons that has almost no meaning given the kind of show we do, because we will be back next week anyway. But if you wanted to brush up on your Simpsons knowledge in the meantime, we got a really good way to do that with today's sponsor, Audible. And guess what? You listeners can go to audibletrial.com/lasertime and get a free audiobook right now just for signing up and a free 30-day trial of the Audible service. And it is really cool. If you don't know what Audible is, it has over 180,000 titles to choose from that you can play in your earbuds, on your iPhone, Android, Kindle, MP3 player, audiobooks, educational lectures, comedy series. Audible now has exclusive series. And yes, if you enjoy podcasts, odds are you're going to like something that Audible has on their network. Now, of course, Audible has the bestsellers like Harry Potter, Dune, The Girl with the Something or Other series, all that kind of stuff. But if I had to recommend something to you, Simpsons fans, Nancy Cartwright's book, My Life as a 10-Year-Old Boy, is available free right there. Or if you like showbiz minutia, which is brimming in this week's episode, you could get Here's Johnny, My Memories of Johnny Carson, The Tonight Show, and 46 Years of Friendship, written and read by Ed McMahon. Was that Ed McMahon? I don't even know. You tell me. Or try Audible for yourself at audibletrial.com/lasertime. You'll get a free audiobook and 30 days to try Audible for yourself. Hi-yo!
Hey, this is Sideshow Luke Perry. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Oh, speaking of tag, there was a clip I didn't get to use of him.
You will be sucked.
We'll find us many other games. Whoa. You will find many more enemies surrounding you compared to the other hack and slash titles. This is not the originary hack and slash anymore. This is an extreme.
I love Talk Fuji. I love him.
So like, I honestly can't remember if I was there or not. Mm-hmm. I think I was there, but it's also I've heard the clip so many times now. I'm like 6 years of that stuff is just like a blur. Yeah. Because it was like you'd go to a conference, and the moment one is over, you are either running or trying to get a cab or trying to like cram a $9 pretzel while you walk fast and drop shit to get to the next conference. Yeah. After 6 hours of conferences, then it's like time to write stuff while everyone goes and parties. And you're like, who the fuck is partying? Who's writing all the stuff that I see on the... Oh, it's me.
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. Coming back in with one of the most 90s themes of all time, the Melrose Place theme song.
I love it.
We'll tell you
it.
Why in a bit.
But, okay.
Can we talk about Gabbo?
The Gabbo thing got me watching it. Like, I was also like, what is Gabbo? Yeah. In first viewing as a kid, I was so excited. And when
I was disappointed in the reveal, even as a plot device.
Yeah. Like, it's like, what?
Why do people care about
people
this?
Do people like this?
Yeah.
And it's him doing, it's Azaria doing is Jerry Lewis, is extreme Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
And it is a reference to a classic film.
Yeah,
right?
It's a reference to The Great Gabbo, a 1929 early sound film. And I was watching parts of it today, not at work. It's about a ventriloquist played by Eric von Stroheim. He's the butler in Hollywood Boulevard, a fantastic actor.
I used to be someone.
Exactly. Yes. And it's about his spiral into madness, and he has a puppet named Otto. I don't think the puppet is evil, but it's a pre-code film, so it's pretty spicy. Mm. Do you want to see women who are dead and sexy? And dead sexy. Please watch The Great Gabbo. It's on YouTube. Somebody put it up there.
In The Simpsons, Gabbo's not a puppet. Gabbo's a human, like a human who is a puppet.
Well, Gabbo,
a living puppet?
Gabbo, every other scene outside of his song, he is a puppet.
Yeah.
He's a puppet in those scenes.
No,
but
he
in that
smokes
song,
and acts on his own accord.
Well, that's
off
what
camera.
I do like is that he lives as a puppet.
Arthur Crandall's insane. He's an insane man.
I want to say that because like some of the best animated sequences involve that Gabbo song, and this is a beautifully animated episode.
David Silverman directed this,
so
you see him all over this episode, too.
So, Chris, you must have loved the song and dance. And known it was Pinocchio, like you.
Well, but
what I've got no strings.
Yeah,
I know you're a Pinocchio. Super
I love
fan,
Pinocchio.
So I was
one of the dumb
if
things I collect. People, and you can help me out with this. Is every kind of Pinocchio home video format.
Wow.
Laser disc, reel to reel, anything. anything. I don't go looking for it. When I find it, I buy it.
So when I was 10, this was another one of those magical I get this moment I saw that song and dance.
Charlie, what's his name? Like more of a send up of Charlie
McCarthy. Maybe Howdy Doody a little bit.
Mean, yes, yeah. But no. The character of Gabbo is, but the Gabbo song.
Oh, yeah. The Gabbo song is I Got No Strings.
It's I've Got No Strings. Like when the Cossacks come in, you're just like, yeah, this is exactly.
I love that jets fly from backstage.
Yeah. It's like the Blue Angels come out or whatever.
This is a pre-drone world. That joke is great.
It is amazing, and I think it's a great piece of animation, and I think it's a very TV writer concern of, oh no, Krusty's in danger in his time slot. Yeah. What is he gonna do? Like that the drama comes from a time slot.
This episode is gonna be such a time capsule.
When you have a show like this with this premise, like you normally don't show the very impressive thing. You show the reactions to it because you realize I can't write something that lives up to what I'm promising. But in this case, it kind of does. They kind of go all out with the animation and the stage production and everything.
And he does do Vin Scully, who just retired last year.
He's still alive.
And when he says can even do Vin Scully, then it's just Shearer's Scully.
Which he does pretty naturally in like anytime he's announcing a sports game.
Yeah, so Vin Scully, a sports game. So Vin Scully was the announcer for the Dodgers, correct?
First the Brooklyn Dodgers, and then he went with them to L.A., and he just retired, did his last L.A. Dodgers game. Mm-hmm. When their season was up, he did his last one, and he's like,
a barrage of pretzels knocking. Why? That's so, Vin Scully.
That's definitely him.
So, of course, they love Scully. They love Vin Scully in The Simpsons. He's the L.A. announcer. So.
Yeah, and the sausage reference is the fact that he would promote the sausages they were selling, the Dodger dogs, in the stadium. But this is him talking about Lucky Strike, which will not kill you.
The Red Legs come up to bat. It means we have time, too, to wax eloquence about Luckies. And that's an easy assignment, let me assure you. Because, friends, there's no smoke like a Lucky. A Lucky's all cigarette, all fine tobacco.
That is a home run, but still talking about Lucky.
Being mild and naturally good tasting tobacco.
Wow, I love old cigarette commercials.
And no filter means more tar. Delicious tar for your lungs to chew. Yes.
Delicious tar.
Good old cigarettes. That's great.
I say smugly as I take a hit off my vapor.
Hey. You want to learn how that kills you for another 5 years.
Well, speaking of smoking, Krusty is chain smoking this idea.
That dummy doesn't scare me. I've had plenty of guys come after me, and I've buried them all. Hobos, sea captains, Joey Bishop.
Don't forget the Special Olympics.
Oh, yeah. I slaughtered the Special Olympics.
Slaughter. That is just the joy he has in slaughter. Yeah. Also, beating Joey Bishop, another Tonight Show
reference.
That's
right, yeah.
Joey Bishop went up against Carson, lost badly.
Not even the Mafia could save his show.
No. But his sidekick, Regis Philbin, still is doing things.
Yeah.
Won't be using the death jingle for him anytime soon.
Nope,
not yet.
Cross those fingers. And Penny Candy was back and actually got a line.
Her last speaking role for, I think, like 20 years, maybe.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I just love this clip of Quimby. He loves Gabbo, too.
I admit I use the city treasury to fund the murder of my enemies. But as Gabbo would say, I'm a bad little boy.
That is so extreme.
Yeah. Just admitting to murder. Accessory to murder.
The murder of my enemies. Yeah. Beautiful
line. Murder of my enemies.
Give us hell, Quimby.
My favorite thing, because I only recently ordered this on Deep. Henry, you tend to buy shirts of everything you've ever loved. Yeah. And I'm not jealous of any of them, other than Worker and Parasite.
Well, kids, this is where you would watch Itchy and Scratchy, except they're on the Gabbo show now. So, here's Eastern Europe's favorite cat and mouse team. Worker and Parasite. What the hell was that?
I love Worker and Parasite so much. If you've ever watched Soviet cartoons, they are this.
I don't know that it's directly based on this, but it's available to buy in a DVD collection, but the Tom and Jerry streak of Gene
Dyche? I think that's his name, yeah.
Back when all the studios shut down their theatrical animation divisions, MGM wanted to keep Tom and Jerry going, so they farmed it out to Czechoslovakia.
To a bunch of untrained animators. There's a lot of online about it now, because I think he just wrote a book
published
a book.
And it's like, because, you know, he hated the characters initially, he thought they were too violent, and you see these things now. You know what I found out? What's the creepiest thing in the world?
cheaply produced children's entertainment. And these cartoons are like, so unnerving, these Tom and Jerry
the
cartoons.
The sound is off, the sound effects are off, the music is weird.
They seem to be using existing MGM sound on like recorded badly and sent over to them,
yeah.
or recording their own in an echoey room, just... Everything that's, feels so dire and weird and haunted housey, and it's Tom and Jerry trying their best to be Tom and Jerry.
That's what I loved about the horrible sound in the Worker and Parasite cartoon too. That
you,
like
you
it was
gotta
their...
if you smoke pot, look up one of these cartoons, turn the lights out, you will get chills by like the horrible dog and cat noises they add onto the MGM stock noises.
I actually interacted with the director of those cartoons on Facebook a year ago. I have a friend that's an animation historian, and he wrote the Ren and Stimpy book we talk about on here a lot. Mm-hmm. I think he was talking about it, or he was posting about it on Facebook, and I was just mentioning those cartoons. I was like, oh, I hated them. They were terrifying to me as a kid. They're so ugly. And then the next post is that director, who's in his 90s, kind of being like, oh, you know, we worked really hard. We didn't have that many resources. He was just sort of like apologizing for his work. And I was like, I'm so sorry. You're still alive, and I treasure you. Thanks for working on these.
He was a big deal at his time, and he created a bunch of cartoon characters over there that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
But as a result, once you know how they're made, they're beautiful.
Yeah, they were really made against adversity.
Yeah,
really.
They're not Tom and Jerry cartoons. They just happen to feature them, but they're really surreal and interesting to watch.
But Worker and Parasite does remind me of about 10 years ago when I worked at a video store, this DVD came out, which was a collection of Soviet cartoons. It was all the Soviet animation, which was... paid for by the state to talk about how evil capitalism is, and I agree with them. They've worked on me. No, but it
was... I, for one, welcome my Russian overlords.
So there were a couple, but there were some in there that were like, oh, this looks so cheap. And then there was actually a couple that had sub-Disney short animation, but good animation.
Yeah, it's...
And they were just kind of amazing to see, but one of them definitely had that background of unhappy workers that a Worker and Parasite bounce in front of.
If you've been fortunate enough to see films from that period, it all concerns the proletariat. Like almost all entertainment. And it's real weird.
It was really relevant.
On the Soviet one, on the Soviet cartoons, they also got at America for its racism, which is just like, well, you guys are your own... You guys got your own business to deal with racism in Russia. But anywho, if you want to get your own Worker and Parasite shirt, they sell them on Threadless. The best
they sold out.
Well, maybe.
That's why I was jealous of you. I was trying to get it.
I'd seen the other one I bought on Threadless still. Threadless has the best because they're all references to the good seasons you like, and they don't have a dumb joke on it of like, girls like it when I bleh or whatever. Like,
say hello to my little friends. Yes. And it's a picture of Bart and Milhouse and Martin.
I hate all that. Well, and speaking of Milhouse, I noticed this in this episode and in the next one. They needed a third friend for lines for Bart
too,
and Milhouse.
Yeah, weird.
And so they're just like, it's Nelson. Yeah. Nelson will be the third person in these jokes.
It's the first time he's just playing with them, and he's not, you know, trying to beat them up or trying to get something out of them.
And by the fifth season, the next time Nelson is there, he will be the combo of like, I will hang out with you, Bart, but I will also punch you in the stomach.
I want to think that he bonded with Bart over their moms both being in jail, and they became friends over that.
Continuity.
And they are correct that slot cars are boring.
This is one of my favorite, like, what...
Well, first off, let's deconstruct that Krusty had such a terrible deal with Itchy and Scratchy they could just leave for Gabbo. He should have had like a year exclusivity somewhere.
Yeah, and we've talked about those old all those children's shows of like the late 60s were to repackage theatrical shorts so they'd get a clown usually to host a children's show.
Yeah, they were not new cartoons.
Yeah, so they could play Popeye cartoons.
And it's sort of like when the king of cartoons would come in for 5 minutes to waste your time.
And also...
but they weren't married to the show that they were on, so they could leave.
Yeah. But Krusty's own ventriloquist doll scared me when I first saw it.
Alphonse.
Is so funny and doesn't... Him in the stands with the shrieking children is one of my favorite images of the entire episode.
And I didn't get until rewatching it as an adult, like, oh, his mustache is really long to hide his mouth when he's doing ventriloquism.
Oh, you know, I didn't think of that, actually.
That's why
great.
He has a stupid long mustache. He's not even alive. He's dead. Crack.
I did just find it somewhere in the episode, is it Gabbo or Krusty broadcasted a KBBL Normally the radio station.
Yeah, yeah.
But the TV station is called KBBL, which is normally just Channel 6.
Yeah, well, Krusty films out of, he films out of Krusty Lou Studios, which is attached to Channel 6.
In my hometown, the TV station and the radio station, one of them had the same letters, call letters. There was a WKBM radio station, WKBN TV station.
I mean, everybody in my town, Tallahassee, Florida, was tripping over the right to call themselves WFSU. Beat your ass every year at the National Bowl. I don't know shit about sports.
Go Manatees.
And so the failure of Worker and Parasite is the end of the show, but if we, that's the end of the act, but if we had watched, as we would see in the 138 special, they then had an extra scene where Krusty actually gets canceled, like is directly, the actual title of the episode happens, otherwise Krusty gets canceled off screen, it's the empty audience, and then cut
which
to,
gives it the illusion
well,
that
we're canceled.
He threw in the towel.
Yeah.
And so that's what this clip is, and it features one of, like, why I think it's such a great animated episode.
Well, that's it. We've been canceled. I think we can be proud that we never did a bad show, except for that week Ray J. Johnson was my co-host. You could call me Ray, and you can call me Jay. Ugh, that thing was funny for about 3 seconds. But the important thing is, we're like a family.
Krusty,
shut your hole!
So, the animation moment is Mr. Teeny takes a swig.
I heard it,
a liquor flask, and then gets, like, the liquor shakes.
Oh,
there's reason for that scene to exist, but this episode is filmed with
shakes.
That's
gotta be just David Silverman or the animator
just
in charge
drive
of that
home.
Scene.
Yes, the monkey is drinking liquor.
He smokes cigars, he drinks liquor, he eats ice cream.
And Brad Bird was still the supervising director and was sticking stuff in, too. I mean,
there are some Brad Bird drawings in this scene, in this episode, rather.
I meant to mention it right when he introduces Worker and Parasite. Those are some of the David Silvermaniest poses ever, especially when he goes, but we've got Worker and Parasite.
Yes.
And he like points a finger up and like, that is it. I know David Silverman.
You can definitely tell it's him.
I feel certain of that.
But I do want to move on to Ray J. Johnson, who they shit all over. Future guest
really
Ray J.
Has.
Johnson. So when they go to Branson in season 14 or 15, Ray J. Johnson is a voice on the show.
Because that's the episode where Grandpa gets a new girlfriend, and he's acting like a teenager, and Homer's having to be the father for him.
Exactly.
And
it's
then
not
they
great.
And so they go off to Branson to get married. It's not great, but I would say it's better than any Mike Scully episode or late Mike Scully episodes because it at least has a family story. It comes from family drama.
And I like the Branson story because my grandma went there a lot, and the tagline for Branson is they took Nick at Night and made it a town. And Ray J. Johnson, born Bill Saluga in Youngstown, Ohio, my birthplace, where only big losers come out of, like
the
me.
Second most famous person from Youngstown?
I think so, who's not a criminal. Or Ray J. Johnson. But yeah, he was a comedian. He did a bit, basically, where he didn't want you to call him Johnson, so he went through all the names you could call him because he didn't want you to call him like a dick, basically. Like, don't call me Johnson because Johnson means dick.
I have
a clip from King of the Hill where Bobby and Joseph, they are mystified why their parents think this is funny. So they're sitting down and listening to this record of Ray J. Johnson and being like, why am I, what is this?
My dad never laughs at anything, so this has got to be good.
Hey, Johnson.
Oh, you doesn't have to call me Johnson. My name is Raymond J. Johnson, Jr. Now, you can call me Ray, or you can call me Jay, or you can call me R.J., or you can call me R.J.J., or you can call me R.J.J. Jr. But you doesn't have to call me Johnson.
I don't get it. What are they laughing at?
And who's he talking to? Is he talking to us? I'd like to hear more from the guy who said, hey, Johnson.
So in the episode that he's a voice on in The Simpsons much later, the line he does in the song about Branson, which is a pretty funny song, he's like, you can call me Ray, you can call me Jay, call me whatever you want, I do 7 shows a day. So he's kind of rubbing it in their face like, I'm popular here, no one knows about me, but they come to see me,
but
so fuck you.
Mr. T for that song.
Oh,
they
really?
They have to sub in Mr. T, who will later be
That's
a guest
right.
on the show.
Yeah.
It's like, come on, Mr. T, you don't want a paycheck for this. That's so cruel to Ray J. Like, it's just like, that's funny for 3 seconds, and then following that up, like, they'll trash him later in this episode.
Yeah.
I love this episode so much, but it is the most time capsule-y episode
it
ever,
really,
filled
really
with things
is.
No one will get under 20.
Yeah, both Charlie Weaver and Ray J. Johnson, I think, are our deepest digs into references so far.
I love doing this show. God damn it.
So then he goes to Johnny Carson's place, and it is a magical moment because Johnny Carson... He made 3 appearances after retiring from The Tonight Show, only 2 of them speaking. He appeared at a teacher's awards thing. Mm-hmm. He appeared and said nothing on Letterman when Letterman went to L.A.
I believe he took down his glasses and drove away.
Yeah. Oh, then he came into the audience and sat at the desk and then got out from the desk and
left. But allegedly he was submitting monologue jokes all the while to David Letterman in secret.
Yes.
Which he wouldn't reveal. Letterman didn't reveal until his death.
Oh, wow.
And so
Carson's death. Letterman is hopefully still with us, depending on when this airs.
Looking like Santa Claus these days.
But I guess that means before we hear a clip from Johnny Carson, we have to hear a certain jingle.
No.
Well, I'd love that it's in the show.
Well, that's true.
Rossi, how you holding up?
I'm kind of worried about the future. How do you deal with it?
Well, you've been on TV longer than I have. I'm sure you've saved up quite a nest egg.
Yeah. Do they still buy human hair down at the wig shop?
I really like the mild fiction it sets up there. That Krusty has been on for longer than the 60s.
Yeah.
As established in Krusty Gets Busted.
Yeah, he started in 63 according to I Love Lisa.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So he, but he technically wasn't on longer. But
yeah.
Though this scene, it like predates Late Shift. Even the book Late Shift was 94. But this, there are scenes like this in the Late Shift movie, at least I haven't read the book, but of Johnny playing tennis and getting and David asking him for advice and this is all these jokes coming together in not just in the I Love Lisa but also in Camp Krusty. He's at Wimbledon as a reference to Johnny Carson.
God, there's so much Carson baked into Krusty.
There's so much into him. Yeah. And this is also after, and it'll actually be in the next episode too, they'll watch Carson on TV and he'll tell terrible jokes.
Yeah,
and
the Carnac jokes.
The joke is like, Carson sucks.
Yeah.
And yet they got him on, obviously, because he doesn't watch The Simpsons. What's he care?
So Henry, you would know this. Was the late show business happening at this time, or was it settled that Letterman was going to CBS and not getting Johnny's?
He had settled it at that point. But he had to finish his contract and then left.
Right, because it was this fall where Conan takes over, where Letterman was. Letterman goes to CBS, fall of 93.
So that's all those dominoes have fallen.
It
was really sped up, but Chris knows this really well, too. But it was really sped up in the Late Shift, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, Late Shift, sorry.
Yeah, it was
over
a period of a few years or something like that. Just, I don't know why I'm so fascinated by these stories.
I love the Late Shift.
I always thought that, like,
HBO
only
film.
I like late night talk shows when I'm a teenager, and apparently they're the most lucrative things in the universe.
Yeah, and they matter the most then, I think.
And it's why when you see they announce a new talk show, you groan because you don't care, but it's worth that much money to even fail. They have to try.
And they probably had to pay Johnny Carson money to use the Tonight Show jingle as that. Like that. Maybe that's also why he came on.
There's a great Carson documentary on Netflix, and it was just like that Carson created the big band noise because he liked that kind of music. Mm. So everybody else who made a talk show hired a band with a brass section because they thought that's what a talk show is, which the Steve Allen, who will also be referenced here, it's just, there's no band. it's just a desk and a couch.
Yes.
It never happened before Carson.
Interesting.
He literally created the talk show band. I find that fascinating. You're still watching Colbert come in with like blaring trombones, like representative of no music being played anywhere.
But Chris, I think you have to play the death jingle. That is,
fuck me.
Death stalks you at every turn. There it is, death.
We don't have to play it twice this episode, do we?
We might. I don't know. I mean, he died in 2005 at age 79. Yeah. Notorious chain smoker. I think one of the last things.
And womanizer.
That didn't kill him though.
No.
But I think one of the last things his brother he said to somebody was like, "Those damn cigarettes." He wouldn't stop chain smoking. He couldn't. So
he didn't even hide it. He like did it on television too. Yeah. Back when they could do that.
Openly smoking on the Tonight Show.
Right. Really weird.
So I love the animation. Speaking of great animation in this, Krusty's animation of like shouting at the horse is so great. Like, now come over here.
Okay, I think I have to give that my line of the show because it works without any visuals.
That's the joke.
Come on, you stupid horse. I got my last $10 on you. No, don't look at me. Run. No, don't come over here. Oh, boy.
He's licking his face. That's a great joke.
Don't look at me. Yeah. Don't come over. And it's all just one shot of Krusty.
That is it. You know, I've seen live horse races many times, and that's a bad horse. Like, they have trained that horse very badly to stop galloping and then also go to the sides. Like, that wouldn't happen.
And just to give me the excuse to play the Melrose Place theme song, just because of this clip.
Oh, Kyle, I just don't think I fit in here at Melrose Place.
From now on, I'll be doing the thinking for both of us.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Melrose Place, thank you to Luke Perry
for
the shout-out. And in that scene...
Wait, Melrose Place?
Well, it's produced by the same spelling group of people. Right. And in that scene, Krusty has on fake sideburns. In a way, he looks really 70s, but that was the visual embodiment of those shows, Luke Perry and Jason Priestley's fucking sideburns.
Yeah. And this show was so huge. I mean, there was a Seinfeld about all the characters being ashamed of watching it, right?
I think it was Models, Inc., but it's the same...
No,
it's...
it was Melrose Place.
Oh, it was Melrose Place.
Models, Inc. is what the great... Greyhounds love watching.
Yeah, and in my shitty hometown of Youngstown, there was an apartment complex, a shitty apartment complex named Melrose Place 2.
Oh my God.
And you really want to live there because it will explode every season.
That's amazing.
Yeah. That was a sexy show to watch as a kid. Definitely.
Speaking of jokes that seem like TV writer ones, saying that Steve Allen did this first, like that was old TV writers, like Steve Allen did that first.
Yeah,
he
for
did this.
A little bit of setup to this clip.
He did the man on the street joke. He did this joke. He did that joke. But and
the Simpsons has an internal fiction where Steve Allen invented everything anyway.
Yes, and he wrote 800 books.
Yeah, and but the Bart and Lisa are watching Gabbo do a prank call that Bart was accused of ripping off Krusty, and Lisa says Krusty ripped this off of Steve Allen, actually. Yeah.
Hello, is this Krusty the Clown?
Is this the callback for that porno film? Look, I was a little nervous that day, but I'm all man, I can assure you.
No, I represent a Japanese camera company. We'd like to pay you $2 million to do a camera commercial.
Whoa, me Reiki very much. I hope I didn't offend you. I need this bad.
Bad enough to hit yourself over the head with the phone?
Whoa, you got it. Go, go. What the? If this is anyone but Steve Allen, you're stealing my bit.
Awesome. We saw some of Krusty's racially insensitive comedy much later.
Yeah.
And another Fall from Grace episode when he has to become a stand-up comic.
He's had like 8 falls from grace.
Yeah.
But this, I wondered if this was the setup for the... miso solly routine that he
with the
will
flapping
do.
Dickie.
I would just like to point out it's Hank Azaria doing a George Takei impression, which he'll do again to be
play
Akira.
Yeah, I think he's done it previously to this. Yeah,
when they can't get Takei, they do him. Yeah, that was great. I love that. That they snuck on a joke about that Krusty couldn't get hard for the porno audition.
Like, I'm all a man.
That's like, I got a little nervous, but like that's so dirty to get on a kid show, and that he's already going to porn, which that also makes me think, like, wait, no, you could be hosting porn. It is the steps. Like, you go to host porn, then porn.
You can be in a Playboy video and still be president.
I feel like it's less dirty than Chief Wickham telling Lisa and Ralph that he was masturbating.
That he had his pants off on his voice.
Or that Marge likes to get fucked slow and then fast.
Well, that's just pure and wholesome.
Yeah, that's
two loving adults.
But
I don't have a problem with it. But I had to burn this one.
Rex Morgan, MD, you have the prescription for the Daily Blues.
Does that? Homer, I don't know if that's an ADR thing because his whole face is covered.
Yeah, I'm sure there was one of many comic strip jokes they wrote for that.
The running gag is that Homer likes only the bad comic strips.
Like, Andy Cap, you wife beating drunk.
And Marmaduke. But he likes
I know,
all
I told that
ones.
Elsewhere. I not only love comic books growing up, I love. Comic strips. Mm. I love them. Like,
yeah, I mean, I ritualistically read them for, I don't know, 15 years maybe.
Yeah,
Garfield Gateway, Calvin and Hobbes, like, universe. Like, I ignored talking to women in front of me to read Calvin and Hobbes for, like, while after puberty. So I would ask my grandparents to save me their comics pages because they lived in a different town that had all these different comics. Mm. And just they lived in this. If anybody goes by Ocala, Florida, top of the world, the top of the world, it's called the top of the world. It's right next to...
is that where Scarface died?
It's a community of people drive mostly golf carts around. I believe it's the size of Manhattan. It's just where old people live in little homes all
it's
attached
like
to one
Del Boca
another.
Vista, but writ large.
It's the most Florida thing I can think of. Apparently it borders right on John Travolta's personal airport field or something
Like
that.
Well, he's got to live close to Clearwater, Florida, the home of the Scientology.
Because they're that big, they had their own newspaper, so like...
Wow.
I would get, like, because I think I wanted, like, the fucking Lockhorns and Mother Goose and Grimm, which weren't in our paper, but the rest of it was all, like, Rex Morgan, MD, and Prince Valiant, and all these holdovers. Rex Morgan takes back to 1948.
I mean, I'm sure these could tell good stories, these soap opera comics. The problem was they told one scene over the course of 3 months because it's like two lines of dialogue per day.
Yeah, that's how it was. I never read those, but I, as the biggest Spider-Man fan in the world, I would try to read the Spider-Man comic strip, and that would drive me crazy too, because it really was, I'm stealing this observation from Hayes Davenport, the comedian who I really like, who also was one of the first people at the JFK Terminal 4 protest Saturday morning. I was seeing him tweet.
Good on him.
Before thousands were there, he was tweeting about it. Anyway, he pointed out that the Spider-Man comic strips had the problem of all those ones of, like, panel one, I will tell you what happened in the previous strip. Panel two, new development. Panel three, to continued. Yeah. And then the next, so then the next day, it's like, here's what happened yesterday. New thing. It's just like, that's interminable.
Meanwhile, like, Prince Valiant is a paragraph next to a single picture.
Yeah.
Like, what is this?
These are insane and, like, unconscionably boring. And I remember trying to read them, but my grandparents' paper was filled with them, including Rex Morgan, MD, which is just something I haven't thought of. I don't think anybody said out loud in at least 15 years. Mm-hmm. Rex Morgan, MD, everybody. But, of course, we move into...
Bart's got a... He's got his own plans to destroy Gabbo.
Yeah, Gabbo's got a bit of a bloody
mouth. That ought to hold the little SOBs. Gabbo, quiet. Oh, I would want to offend the little SOBs.
This is, but that, like, fully lets you know Gabbo is a sentient being.
Yeah, no, Arthur Crandall is crazy.
I think that's the only thing. Yeah. He's just always hanging out with him. And then off camera, he's just like, please, Gabbo.
I mean, this is based on a movie where a ventriloquist goes insane.
Yeah.
So it's happening with Arthur Crandall. And this is a reference to an urban legend. On the commentary, they believe it happened, but I looked it up on Snopes and it didn't.
Me too.
You did
yes.
too? Yeah. Because
I thought I could find the clip of it.
Me
I was
too.
Like, oh, let's find the clip and do it. But yeah, so.
Yeah, radio host named Uncle Don. It was said that he said that ought to hold the little bastards, but it never happened. It was just sort of this, you know, meme or whatever that got passed around and became an urban legend.
It was the Mandela effect or one of those other things of just like everybody told each other this happened. So it's just a created memory that everybody agrees to.
Yeah, Mandela effect, you might remember recently from Sinbad starring in Kazam, which didn't happen. And even he says people do not believe
that him. That infuriated me because I was like, in the mid-90s, I watched every Sinbad film, and I knew he... I was like, you're getting it confused with the superhero Shazam and the Shaquille O'Neal movie.
Do you know how somebody dated it back? This is deviating. Because if you watch Kazam on video, like all of us did, there's a preview in the beginning for Sinbad's first kid. If your brain is mush and not fully formed, you think Sinbad when you think of the Genie movie. And so a lot of people are like, you're just racist. Like... You would have seen Sinbad every time you popped in Kazam. So, and if you're a little kid, it's understandable. But when the actor and director refute you, this doesn't exist.
That's the part that drives me crazy of just like, look, you may think this is a Berenstain versus Berenstain thing, but like, this isn't. You just...
Human brain is fallible.
Yeah. Look that up, people. It's great. But of course, I love it. This is one of my... But that's second favorite Kent Brockman news.
So that's why they say it exactly. This oughta hold the little. But they say SOBs instead of bastards.
SOBs is little. I don't think I knew what it meant.
I
either heard son of a bitch. I never heard anybody say SOB. this is my second favorite Brockman moment ever.
Gabbo's kind of language has no place on or off TV. And that's my two cents. That oughta hold those SOBs. What the?
Brockman fired.
I loved it. They already had the Chiron ready.
One thing I want to mention, not to bring us down, is I've seen this device happen in a billion pieces of fiction where a character is brought down by being recorded, not knowing they're being recorded, like a face in the crowd. So many movies, so many TV shows. We know based on real life, that can no longer happen anymore. You cannot use that plot device. You shouldn't have used it before because it's so overused, but now it's like... This person said the worst thing, another president.
Yeah.
So like, this just proved it doesn't work well, and it doesn't work on Gabbo.
Well, that's
why. I don't explain why it doesn't work on Gabbo, other than...
Gabbo Gaff.
Yeah, other than, like, maybe people were more mad at Brock, and they just looked at Brock.
Yeah.
People,
I guess,
like,
there was no reference to what happened afterwards, right?
I hate people like Kent Brockman, who fan outrage of things that a ton of people have said. Mm-hmm. And someone prominent gets caught saying it. It's a little shocking.
That's locker room talk.
But it's, well, that's just evidence of a terrible person. I understand that, but...
I want to say this helped bring Gabbo down enough for people to get interested in Krusty
again.
That's
true.
Maybe for a special.
That's true, but that's because Krusty's got friends.
Yeah.
35 years in show business and already no one remembers me. Just like
what's his name and who's it's and, you know, that guy always wore a shirt.
Ed Sullivan?
Yeah.
I didn't know you knew Luke Perry.
No, he's my worthless half-brother.
He's a big TV star.
Yeah, on Fox.
That face.
Listen to Taylor, Bette Midler.
Bette and I owned a racehorse together. Crudler.
Hey, Bart, if we get all these big stars to appear on a special with Krusty, it might get his career going again.
There we go. There's the episode.
Bette Midler is a national treasure, by
yes.
the way.
I want to reference the Crudler joke, which is something I just got a few years ago, where you think if they were to own a horse together, they would combine their names to be Misty. Mm-hmm. But they did the opposite. They did Crudler.
All right.
So that's the joke. The horse should be named Misty, but it said it's named Crudler.
The worst.
Mustofsky.
Well, if you've ever gone to a horse race, every name is horrible because they're named by rich guys who just name it like, this is 17502 or Man of War, all these things. Like, the names make no sense because they're just named by their owners.
A little bit of trivia. Before we named the show Laser Time, it was supposed to be a joke based on a Mr. Show sketch where a guy playing pool taught you about a horse race.
Oh.
And Bob Odenkirk yells, "Here comes Batman the horse."
Papa's delicate condition.
I think we finally don't own the URL Batman the podcast, which is supposed to be the name of it, being exactly what it is now, a show about fucking commercials and action figures. And,
was one of them if Mandy Patinkin was a horse?
Yeah, and Mandy Patinkin was a horse. Yeah.
And then we do the clap every time and then look at the screen.
That's
and
why
then
you
laugh.
Have nitrogen.
Oh, so great.
That's a great sketch.
So, Luke Perry being his brother has been completely forgotten from they never mentioned it ever again. Krusty has fallen so far. This is more of the Elvis thing of Elvis was in a bad place. And that I also did love that old Jewish man. He's never been this crazy before. This is the only time he's ever been a guy who dances in his underwear on the street. But that's great. And the old man dancers on the TV. I like that. I get that joke now. That is, they'll put anything on television. That was the joke. But the timing of this episode, though, too, the third act is half the runtime.
That's true.
I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah,
but
they cram every celebrity in that third act.
I mean, it's a difficult task. I want to play this one because, man, thank you so much again to Luke Perry.
A horsey! And what are you making, sideshow Luke Perry?
A 19th century carousel.
Luke Perry's moment in this episode is kind of my favorite gag, being shot of the cannon.
It's what? Really
great. What? It's so good, and it just doesn't work in audio.
Luke Perry put on his working boots. I'm like, some people said, you get 5 words from me, and then I go home. But Luke Perry was like, I'm having fun. Simpsons is fun. I wonder, though, he never came back, and I do wonder that, in the time between him recording this episode and it airing, was the monorail episode, which had a very, very direct shot at Luke Perry of, he's young, he's hip, he's 35 years old.
That's right.
That was also the hokiest Luke Perry joke that everybody was making.
I'm
sure it was in Mad Magazine, SNL, whatever
else. It
wasn't
very nice.
It's happening to Riverdale right now.
Yeah.
It's true.
Jughead fucks now.
He should be, but so they go on a tour of all the celebrities.
I'm sad that Bette Midler doesn't have any more great lines. It's everybody. Her Bette Midler being a scourge to villainy.
Yeah. She kills people.
Yeah.
Oh no, Bette Midler.
Bette Midler kills Snake, and whoever this was.
I'll get you for this, Midler.
I love the 80s action music. That was actually part of her clause. Like, she wanted to have her environmentalism worked into the show in some way. She ran a group at some point. I don't know.
I'm not aware of her environment. I'm not aware of a lot about Bette Midler. but I just assumed it was someone like an Ed Begley Jr. that everybody associated with environmentalism.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she definitely has liberal causes. And she was a big early gay rights advocate.
Gay people like Bette Midler?
What? When she was coming up in her career as a singer, she would sing at bathhouses in Manhattan, like New York. Like, that was a famous thing she did. And I like, what Bette Midler movie have you actually seen all the way? Like, Hocus Pocus, you've seen that one.
We talked about her on 302010 because I had to do a little research on her, that she had this huge Disney contract in the mid 80s of all movies I have not seen. Outrageous Fortune, I have seen from Down and Out in Beverly Hills, Beaches.
like a box office titan for a very for a brief period there, and then I didn't see her in a lot after. At this point, I don't think we see Bette Midler in just about anything.
Well, she went back to the stage, and you should see the film. The Rose is great. Well, the song in The Rose is one of my favorites. I will cry hearing it. But the
it's on a list of names of things Chris won't see.
Well, all right. Well, let's straighten this up with Hugh Hefner in a visit to the Playboy Mansion.
Desalinization plant?
Yes. The grotto uses so much water. The bunnies felt we should go this way.
Smart bunnies, Hef. I can't call you Hef, can't I?
No.
Can no. you believe, of all the people who are dead in this episode, none of them are Hugh Hefner?
I think he's 90?
Yeah, clean living?
No. Not at all.
Well, I will say these things about Hefner, that he was, as a pornographer, he was on the edge of freedom of speech stuff, and also had been early advocate of pro-life stuff in
pro-life?
Pro-choice.
That's right.
In pro-segregating television.
Yeah,
but he did not wear an American flag diaper.
No, yes, that's true. I mean, he's just the less extreme version of Larry Flint. Like, same with they won't show the beaver in Playboy, he won't wear a diaper. Like, that's the same. But there are good things about him, but he's also gross and a gross old man. And like, the Playboy empire was dying, and then his daughter took it over and rebranded it for the 90s, and then it died again in the 2000s.
And
but
it's still not dead, but
no.
I believe the grotto he's speaking of is a house he no longer owns. He might still live there.
I've read a story maybe in the past few years about just how awful the Playboy Mansion is. It's just falling apart. It's dilapidated. It's just a shadow of its former self.
People rent out the outside for parties, such as video game reveals.
To say they've been there.
Yeah, well, for real.
I mean, back in the day, it was like, you'll go here and you'll like see James Caan fucking some lady.
Watch Saul Silverstein getting his dick sucked.
Yeah, you can see all these.
Silverstein?
Yes, all the time.
What?
Yep. Yeah. You look up people who were the regulars of the grotto.
Yes, man.
But also the thing in Playboy always was like, you wouldn't, as somebody who was friends with people who would look at straight porn and who would look at it, I'd be like, well, this one's easier for me because I don't have to see all of the vagina. That's nice. They shoot around it.
I fell in love with the first Playboy I ever saw, featuring Kirk Cameron's on-screen girlfriend from Growing Pains, who he then fired for appearing in that very issue. The only pornographic magazine I saw for years. Mm. When I saw how good it can get outside of Playboy, I never ever went back.
Well, and by 90...
I don't have a lot of need for like $6,000 stereos. That is the bulk of the fucking magazine.
I just remember it smelling like 8 colognes. Like, that's what Playboy is. Yeah. It just smells like 8 colognes.
They have a bunch of inserts in it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, because that's their audience they're selling it to.
It was always supposed to be a high-end,
it was known for actually very good journalism.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, I mean, when you're a kid, I think all the Playboys you see are at least 10 years out of date, or at least for me it was. Of course, we all know the phenomenon of finding porn in the woods.
Yes.
And that's where I found my first porn. Yeah.
Well, my friend caught me with them, was going to tell my mom.
I mean, I was lucky in that I had a friend. Well, lucky. I wasn't enjoying those Playboys too much. I was more entertained by my friends getting hard looking at the Playboy. if I'm being totally honest. But I wouldn't tell them that. But anyway, I had two different friends who were just like, their dads were huge porn freaks, who to the point were like, if they took a 6-month-old Playboy, their dad would not notice.
Yeah,
so,
the people I took it from are like, there's so many Playboys, the garage is filled with a bunch of unguarded porn mags.
Well, now we have all that porn cataloging software.
Yeah, that's
makes
thing.
It much easier.
It's just porn is so nothing, and that's what killed Playboy. So. Well, not killed, but
it has a TV, it has a channel, it has a website that has a completely different identity from nude women.
Yeah, but in the 90s, we got to see the resurgence of, like, the centerfold, at least back-to-back, it was, like, Pam Anderson and Jenny McCarthy, who became monster stars.
And Nicole Smith,
too. Mm-hmm. All three of those blondes became major stars and got to own their own brand and do their own stuff just from the fame that began with being centerfold of the year in Playboy. Yeah. And then they went on to, then they were like, well, I don't have to show my tits to be a star. I can do a sketch comedy show like Jenny McCarthy did with Brian Posehn on it.
And
like,
John Benjamin, too.
And John Benjamin,
Melissa
yeah.
McCarthy, because they are related.
There was I remember the only sketch I remember from the Jenny McCarthy show was where they seemed to be setting up that Brian Posehn was the male guy at Jenny McCarthy's office, and he was stalking her. But then it turned out that she was stalking him.
Oh. Was that like, during?
Alone.
Was that during Mr. Show? Like a Mr. Show's downtime?
It was. Wow. Yes, yeah.
I just remember the sketch where the puppets kept getting distracted by her and just keep saying, "Oh, you smell so good." Like, "Oh, you smell nice," or whatever. Yeah.
I will stand at the time. She was so gorgeous and so outgoing and funny. I really didn't like Jenny McCarthy
and Pam Anderson. You know, she also Pam. Speaking of people getting political, like she was very anti-fur, big vegan, big time, all that stuff. Good friends with Sam Simon, co-creator of The Simpsons, to bring this back to The Simpsons.
It brings back The Simpsons.
The Playboy just about. I think the last gasp for Playboy as a porn pornography was when they paid a lot of money to Lindsay Lohan to get naked for their thing, and it was just like it was uploaded immediately. Yeah. It was just like nobody's going to buy these images. Dudes do want to jerk off to it, but they're not going to buy Playboy.
I ain't paying for it.
When I grew up a little and did discover other means. Opening up a Playboy and their interviewer, those to me are like the first podcasts. It's a prolonged, outrageously long, uncensored, unabridged interview with fascinating people. I forget who that guy is. He's amazing. I love the Playboy
interviews. I think most of their archives are online. I think like every centerfold is online for free. Yeah.
I don't have the screen for it.
Go out there and jerk off, gentlemen.
But the Chili Peppers are here.
The Chili Peppers are here. There's a great moment later. But in terms of something for some... Every time I talk about fucking Woody Woodpecker, which you'd be astonished how much I do it with these seven podcasts I'm on a weekly basis.
Stop talking about it, goddamn.
Brett and Dave, throw this at me.
We want Chili Willy!
Chili Willy's the penguin, right?
He's the penguin from Land Studios.
Yeah. I think we already know this, but Flea is easily the best actor of the Chili Peppers.
Yeah, he's the worst actor in Back to the Future 2, the best actor in the Chili in this episode of the Chili Peppers.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's... John Frusciante, the Chili Peppers had like 8,000 guitarists.
Yeah, I think it's him. It's before
Dave Navarro
joined up. But this was back when it was cutting edge. Like the Chili Peppers were cutting edge. They weren't like the Grateful Dead for our generation now. Which
the
now
Grateful
just like,
Dead for 90s funk rock.
I mean, they've been ruined by John Daly to me. Like look up
Abracadabra California.
Yeah, look up Abracadabra California. Bing a bong a bong a bong Burbank.
Yeah,
and the. I have a line in here I say all the time, which is now back to the wall. It's like that if I'm going to go back to doing nothing at work or doing something, I'll end a conversation with someone like, and now back to the wall.
That whole scene, I should have got it because it's really funny. Like, can I look at the wall? Not for free. My wallet's in the car. What a fun... You walk into the bar without your wallet.
It's like, he is so stupid. Now, back to the wall.
Though the writers admit that was them being lazy of like, hey, Mo, look over there. What am I looking at? What, like, he had nothing.
Yeah. I mean, Mo is normally not that stupid, but it worked for the scene.
But I'm not going to play the death jingle again, but it's first Liz, baby.
Miss Taylor, a couple of grade school kids wanted you to be on a Krusty special. I told them to puzzle off.
Good.
I remember hoping, watching this, until I remember she does have a line. If she has in The Simpsons twice saying one word,
that would be
so cool. But she has
she does
one more
line.
But yeah.
That is great. I think that was one of my favorite jokes when I first saw it, that it is a parody of this episode of saying, why would a celebrity do something if children showed up? She wouldn't.
And she died in 2011, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. I remember writing up a post about it because...
But she was famous for being famous at that point. She was not... And I remember... It's not nice, but I remember... My mom or my parents agreeing like Elizabeth Taylor doesn't look like that now.
No,
it's not. But she was pure Hollywood glamour, and we miss her very much.
So she was polishing a diamond, I think, in the scene, and she had a perfume called White Diamonds or something like that. I remember that because on CBS one night she appeared on every sitcom to promote her perfume, like Murphy Brown and like Evening Shade and all that shit.
It was amazing,
because she had kind of withdrawn from not from public life but from being in anything,
pretty much
appearing and stuff. And I remember writing about her when she died. It is really sad that if you're from my generation, the most common Elizabeth Taylor ground you have is where she plays Wilma's mother in the Flintstones.
Oh, my God. I mean, it has to be hard if you're known as the world's most beautiful woman and you start aging. Like, what do you do with that identity after that?
And what's her main name? What's Wilma's main name?
I forgot.
Shale.
Clever.
Great.
Ooh, but please watch. I'm going to have to look this
every
up.
Time.
You guys talk some.
Please watch Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? Fantastic movie. You can see her at her best.
And I just watched Night of the Iguana, which is fucking amazing.
You want to see her as sexy as watch her in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
this is a hard segue back into Sideshow Mel working at the Gulp and Blow.
The Gulp and Blow in its last appearance, I think. And this Gulp and Blow.
The manager here is like, for some reason, makes me laugh so much now.
We're skipping over the manager. We're skipping over Krusty's weight gain, which was like 8 seconds
in
the episode.
Yeah, but I kind of hate all that.
Like, it's not great, but it's where they put in the Bill Murray jokes we talked about earlier. And also, he gains about 200 pounds in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And I also just wanted to mention it because I have a theory that they originally timed out all that stuff to Eye of the Tiger or the Rocky theme.
Yeah.
Because it ends just with a straight up Rocky. The last two scenes are Rocky. But in the Simpsons
off-putting.
House,
yeah.
Like he's beating, they're boxing in the living room.
And Homer eating raw beef.
That's hanging in their kitchen.
I imagine there's both not enough time for the song and not enough money in the budget considering how many songs ended up being licensed for this episode.
Yeah. And so, but it's silence. Like instead it's silence.
Sorry, Krusty. I like it here. Mr. Johansson treats me with dignity.
Is this clown bothering you, Mel?
That's all right, Mr. Johansson. I'll handle it.
Here's your taco, sir. I don't want it. But this comes out of my salary. If I had a girlfriend, she'd kill me.
I don't know. I love all that, and I want to know more about the incredibly earnest Mr. Johansson.
Okay, maybe it was the mustache, but I felt he had a crush on Mel. Is this man bothering you?
I like that he respected him. Yeah, more managers should be like
him. I agree.
And meanwhile, that, ow! Ow! That was...
Very much like Barney. Yeah.
It's another precursor to the rake... joke
rake.
That of just like, no, do it two more times. So I was wrong. Shale was not her main name. Slag Hoople.
Slag Hoople.
Wilma Slag Hoople.
Sounds like a slur.
Wow. It's same in common with all the naming conventions of Steven Universe, thanks to the love of those stones. But this is one of my favorite lines of the entire show. Love calling the clip Giving Away, Give It Away, where they are convinced to change the lyrics of the song.
Now, boys, the network has a problem with some of your lyrics. Would you mind changing him for the show?
Forget you, clown.
Yeah, our lyrics are like our children, man. No way.
Well, okay. But hear what you say. What I got, you gotta get and put it in you. How about just, what I'd like is I'd like to hug and kiss you.
Wow. That's much better. Everyone can enjoy that.
I love that. It's based on the famous story that they told the Doors and Jim Morrison to change Girl We Couldn't Get Much Higher in that song when they sang it on Ed Sullivan. They said they would, and then he sang the original lyrics and got them very angry. And it was a very dramatic moment in Oliver Stone's The Doors, starring Val Kilmer, which if you haven't seen that, but you have seen Wayne's World 2, you've seen most of that film.
That's amazing. That The Doors was the touchstone for that movie.
But Catcher in the Rye, the Field of Dreams.
Yeah. Oh, there's one more thing, though. This might be based on the Rolling Stones. Having to change Let's Spend the Night together to Let's Spend Some Time Together on Ed Sullivan in 67. Yes. So this happened twice.
And they were supposed to be in the show.
And you can see Mick Jagger rolling his eyes as he sings the change line. Wow. And he slips it in once, one time.
Sullivan is a very repressive force, it seems.
But being very knowledgeable of that song, I don't remember it being much of a controversy. I remember thinking, like, man, I can't believe they're saying this on the radio, but I don't remember a lot of people complaining.
I never, until Krusty said it out loud as a kid, I never got, oh, yeah, what I got, you got to get and put it in you is pretty.
Repeat three times.
Yeah.
And we've mentioned the Gilbert Gottfried podcast a lot on the show, and I have to say, based on all of the ancient guests they interview, you get the sense that Ed Sullivan was a talentless dipshit weirdo that no one liked and could not take a joke, did not understand anything about show business. Just sort of fell into his
luckiest
position.
Luckiest man in the world. You're the one guy in a suit who showed up for this thing called television.
Yeah.
You're hired.
Oh, and I like that Luke Perry says, let's do it for Mom. Establishing that is their shared relation because it is hard to imagine Luke Perry being his father
Mason's
being
son.
Jackie Mason the rabbi. Instead, it's probably his mom got with some Gentile.
Krusty is so resentful and jealous, he wants to disfigure his brother and ruin his life and career.
It's another of those moments of them dreaming of something and then it exactly happens. Like that happens all the time in season 4. So many times I imagine this and then the exact thing happens, and this is more like the Elvis special. That's like, it's a Sinatra bit but from the Elvis special.
Yes.
The Krusty letters are the Elvis comeback special from 68, which Speaking of Gilbert Godfrey podcast, he interviews the director of that, who pulled it all together and got Elvis to lose the weight and get Elvis to stop listening to every enabler in his life and finally do something great. And it stuck with, it sounds like it stuck with Elvis for about a year, and then he went back.
And to dig even deeper, this singing of Send In the Clowns was from the Jackie Gleason show. Wow. He would sing it when, I think, Red Skeleton or some famous clown would come out. He would sing the whole thing very schmaltzy. Okay.
This schmaltz? But this sad.
The pose
from Springfield, the entertainment capital of the state, the Krusty Comeback Special.
Send in the clowns. Those Daffy, Laffy clowns.
It's very touching.
I was born right on the cusp of this style of entertainment leaving forever, where if you're on television, you will have to sing whether you can or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this, I find this very entertaining.
And I think a lot of these drawings were done by Brad Bird. The schmaltz. When he goes schmaltz.
Schmaltz.
Yeah, that's
like
definitely
he's
Brad
cupping
Bird.
Something. Like schmaltz. Though Send in the Clowns is a Stephen Sondheim song. It originates from Broadway.
Which musical?
It is from the musical A Little Night Music, the 1973 musical adaptation of Ingmar Bergman's film Smiles of a Summer Night.
Interesting.
It's a ballad from Act Two in which the character Desiree reflects on the ironies and disappointments of her life. Ooh. But like all great songs sung by women, Frank Sinatra steals it and makes it more famous. And
move over, honey.
I love that Recognition documentary where Nancy Sinatra's talking about like having to wrestle. Yeah. These boots are made from walking away from Frank Sinatra. Because, like, why would you as a man need to sing this song? This is a song a little girl sings.
It doesn't make any sense.
Stop.
And the way Mel shows up, it's like the 17th time done a Rat Pack reunion joke.
I thought it was the Jerry Lewis Dean Martin reunion thing.
Yeah, well, the one with Sideshow Bob and Black Widower was even more directly this. Yeah. But it was the same deal.
Same joke.
But it's just they've... Jeff Martin would say it on commentaries all the time. Like, they were just so influenced by that. It was a major moment for them as children of the 70s.
Thank you for anyone under 25 for hanging in here for this. I don't know why I'm so fascinated by a bunch of this shit
barely
saw.
We're here to guide you through it and tell you why it's funny.
I love it, dude.
And that also is when Gabbo throws Ray J under the bus again and just like, Ray J. Johnson.
But this Midler jam has warped my memory of the actual event.
Same here. Same
did you
here.
Ever know that you're my hero? You're everything I would like to be.
Wow. Really good thing.
It's beautiful.
You can fly higher than an eagle.
God, it's terrible.
Because you are the wind beneath my wings.
Dan Castellaneta can sing. He sings as Barney in the next episode beautifully.
But I don't know why he changes it to the first person.
Ego.
So,
I am the wind beneath your wings.
That again feels like a sequel joke to the Demoxenel episode. Uh-huh. When Marge is singing "You Are So Beautiful to Me," Homer sings it back selfishly from his perspective, and I think it's a similar joke of you're just so selfish that you couldn't sing this song back to the person from the same perspective.
Mm,
you're
so
like,
vain.
No, you're singing this song about me, so I'm going to change the words to reflect how this song is about me.
She's singing about God. He's always happy. Oh wait, he's always mad.
I have to imagine. I think is that Bette Midler really singing for the.
I think that's
Simpsons?
An original. I think she sang it for them, especially to tune it out with Krusty.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, in just the last two episodes ago. No, yeah, Whacking Day, Barry White sang it originally in the booth. And I could see Bette Midler not being such a superstar to be like, I'm not singing.
I loaded it up for comparison, and I was like, oh, I'm not listening to this at all. But she's doing it live in the Simpsons recording booth. That's fucking great.
It is a Bette Midler original. She sang it for the film Beaches.
It's a reference to her singing on Johnny the Carson's second to last.
Yes.
Johnny Carson's second to last episode of The Tonight Show. And I had the false memory you did, Chris, where I thought she sang this song, and
I thought she
sat on his desk like she does in this episode.
The last fool, Mr. Carson, will have to suffer gladly.
She was the final guest. This
you
is the last episode.
Oh, it's the last one. Okay.
Yep.
Oh, well, he is.
Quarter to three. There's no one in the place except you and me. So set him up, Joe. Got a little story I think you should know.
So it's not that song. It's one
Goosebumps.
One more for my baby. It's
like Goosebumps because we just and we did a Laser Time show about it, about saying goodbye to David Letterman, and whether or not you were a fan of him, the people who tuned even in and out, it's really interesting to watch these goodbye to television institutions.
And in this clip too, I mean, Carson seemed like kind of a dick to people and professionals, but he's crying at the end of this. He's breaking up, and it's really touching to watch.
It reminds me of Norm MacDonald crying at David Letterman.
That is what I like. That
Norm
Letterman
said, like, we're not friends. Like, he's not even necessarily nice to me, but
But then it was funny that Letterman, being the stone cold like asshole he is, he's just like,
What happened, Norm?
Like, he wouldn't cry even in the last episode. Nope. No tears. He's just like, but Norm
is it about that job?
or if you saw the night of the last telecast, Jimmy Kimmel on his show was like,
breaking up.
I love David Letterman, and you should watch that and not me. And we used to watch it together, remember? It's like he's crying. Like,
He has shots of him like with the late night with David Letterman birthday cake, and his first license plate was a custom late show.
Oh, I missed that.
That's how big
a
fan he was of it. And I was like that with Conan as a little kid.
Me too.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I read the sequel to The Late Shift, which was about the Conan Leno thing, and they have a introduction to all of them, all of the contemporary players, including Jimmy Kimmel. And that's why I found all that out. It was quite a surprise. Carson is made to be the perfect man, as I think that was them being mean back of like, okay, we'll be so nice. You'll be the strongest human that's ever lived and the perfect entertainer.
Do you think that was an interpretation of like maybe Carson or his people's notes?
No, I think they...
When you say it like that, that's the vibe I get.
The notes were he didn't want to be a mooch, or they didn't like his portrayal, so they nicened it up.
Yeah,
like,
I think they're
pretty clear of that.
We're passive-aggressive in that way. Like, you'll be the nicest, strongest guy ever.
Gene and Reese are really not fans of Johnny Carson. No. Like, I think... There are fewer... Once Merkin takes over, the Johnny as Krusty the Clown jokes are a little less.
Yeah, like, I mean, we see a little bit of that in Season 6, Bard of Darkness, where he's, again, hosting a very, like... It's more like Jack Parr's Tonight Show, though.
Yeah, it's much more like the Jack Parr Tonight Show in those flashbacks. Mm-hmm. And when they're like, oh, it's classic Krusty, like, well, but it is the Krusty... They watch episodes of Krusty Show that are just like, this is a clown show. This is a bozo show. This is not the Tonight Show.
What, do you interview the Dalai Lama and then throw to the cartoon? Like,
Though in the I Didn't Do It episode, it is more like SNL.
Yeah. It really is.
No, but he's every showbiz thing they need.
Yeah, he's whatever celebrity they want him to be at any time.
And then Liz Taylor finds out she wasn't invited. Like, I've got to fire the agent.
I wish she didn't have that line. But it makes it funnier that, like, at the end of the show, she's standing in the window looking into Moe's.
Yeah,
this wouldn't be a Season 4 episode if they didn't bash an award. It's like, you should win it. I like that Midler went in on it. Like, you should win an Emmy for this. No, they wouldn't know nothing. Dinosaurs, like, hey, like, that is them saying, F you, we're still mad we didn't get every Emmy we feel we should get it.
The next episode's chalkboard gag is, I will never win an Emmy. Bart writing on, but they won Emmys. They've clearly won Emmys.
I don't know why, but one of the funniest moments in the show is Flea yelling in Moe's bar for some reason. I guess because no one yells that loud in The Simpsons.
Off mic.
You can tell the mic interference on that, but they kept it, and I love it.
What's up, Mo?
Hey, you can't come in here dressed like that.
Get with the times, Mo.
Yeah, I say if it feels good, do it.
All right.
That doesn't work.
Don't snap my undies.
That doesn't work. They're in their underwear.
It's a preview of Season 5's Do What You Feel Festival, I think.
It is a Do
Which
What
the
You
underwear
feel.
Thing was not a trend. The Red Hot Chili Peppers did not start that.
You don't. That's a very,
and I bet
like,
they probably, if anything, they were more famous for that. Those pictures of them and the performances of just the socks over their dicks.
Pubic hair
bursting out like an eclipse.
They could not do that on The Simpsons, I think. It would be too grotesque.
It was, they got as far as they could, and... Does that last clip have the sweetest plum in it?
Oh, of course it does.
That's the sweetest plum.
I'm a star again. I don't know how to thank you, kids.
That's all right, Krusty. We're getting 50% of the t-shirt sales.
What? That's the sweetest plum, you little... what the hell. You deserve it.
Man, but t-shirt sales for that? Man, Bart and Lisa.
50% of t-shirts.
We don't see that money later in the series.
Some of those mentions are like, well, wait, where'd all this money go? Unless you need to explain how they have money to fix things later. You're like,
To prolong one of our longest episodes ever.
God, there's so much to explain.
But the t-shirt stuff, like, I just don't see that anymore. But in school and abroad, everybody would wear t-shirts commemorating where they've been and who they've seen. I do not see that at all anymore.
That's true. Yeah.
Nobody wears. I don't see anybody with wearing musicians or like tour dates.
They more buy
on their
joke
shirts.
T-shirts like us. They're like, I'm currently wearing a Threadless tee now.
I saw Dolly Parton was so blown away. I bought a fucking shirt.
I would do that. I actually just went to one of my favorite comedy podcasts, Rana and Beverly. I bought a t-shirt there, and it was I'm a Beverly on the t-shirt because that's who I am of the two of Ron and Beverly. If you like Ben Midler, Ben Midler like me, then you will love the Ron and Beverly show. It's
only one of five comedy shows where people play old Jewish folks, right?
Yes. But
it's
hey,
very popular these days.
It is. But they're old Jewish women.
That's true. It's not like Oh Hello.
Yeah. Oh Hello, which I love. Oh my God. I wish, Bob, you and me should have seen Oh Hello when we were in New York City.
There's no time. I would see that.
Yeah. It is $90 for the cheap ticket.
There's no money left for cocaine.
Okay.
Cocaine.
But this episode ends on what I feel is a bad note. It ends on an ADR line from Grandpa. Is this the bus to the Civic Center?
Yeah.
But they're sitting on Johnny Carson's head while he's holding them aloft of the table and playing the accordion and tap dancing. That's cool, but I want to know what the original line was, because I think ending on an ADR line is a bad move. It just kind of ends like meh.
Well, you kind of aren't hearing the line as much. You're just going like, the music's fun. Or I love episodes that end with the theme song in it.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Those are sweet moments. And
maybe not even having a line at all would have been better.
And speaking of how it's a sequel to the softball episode, same ending. Softball episode ends with a shot of all the guest stars. Yeah. This one ends with a shot of all the guest stars, including Elizabeth Taylor in the window looking inside
like a hungry orphan.
Which
that's
is
cute.
Like, what are they doing in Moe's? Like, why is they couldn't host it at a better place than Moe's? But I say that's the sweet. I know I've said that's the sweetest plot.
I say it all the time.
I say it constantly. It's not even the only time they say it in The Simpsons. It's used a lot.
And we've reached the end of season four, but not production season four. We still have two more episodes.
Yes. So I would tell the listeners we will do a season four wrap up, but when we're done with production season four, I know that seems like an arbitrary thing to do, but that unlike even from three to four, the changeover production-wise from four to five is immense. It is an almost entirely different staff. Yep. Well, like 70% different staff. So.
I think like Bill Oakley, Josh Weinstein,
Conan and
Frank Mula, that's basically it.
And Mula gets the old heave-ho pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, he's not on for very long.
And then coming after that will be Greg Dan. Daniels,
Jace Richdale,
yeah, a lot of big name folks, but
David Cohen,
but that'll David X. Cohen,
Ken Keeler. I can name them all.
I always forget about David Cohen, David S. Cohen, and then David X. Cohen as a Simpsons writer, because even though he was there as longer
season
than Greg
six.
Daniels,
oh, without the X or something,
he was S. He became X when he went to Futurama and be more futury. So we'll do the wrap up of season four then after Cape Fear, which is 2 weeks away. But this is the end of season four. It is a great season. I think watching it, you do see sometimes like you were tired or you used a script you would have rewritten.
Having skipped ahead to season five, I think that's those are the real glory days that we talk. Even though I love some of these episodes, but like everything is firing on all cylinders in four and five in a way I thought happened in four when we got it at three.
So I don't know. When we get to like,
I can't wait till we get like, it'll be just 2 years till we get to a decline.
When we get to the 18th episode of season five, let's see if we're still saying, they're all great, because all of them get the writers obviously get tired later in the season.
Season four had a brief dip in it, but I feel like it recovered in the end, and then there were maybe 3 months to work on the remaining episodes before they aired in the fall. So they had more time to spend on these later in the season.
The B Sharps is a great episode.
It really
and
is. Yeah.
Cape Fear is perfect.
Beautiful.
It's one of the best.
And controversial for some people. Yeah. some actors on the show, I guess. So this has been Talking Simpsons. I'm sorry if I've been off my game today, folks. I'm sick.
Both Bob and I are
Chris
pretty
gave
sick.
Me podcast fever or something.
Oh, come on.
But you can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also host Retronauts, a classic gaming podcast, every Monday at retronauts.com. Find us on the internet or where you get your podcasts from. And I also write for Fandom at Fandom.com and Something Awful at SomethingAwful.com. They're both fantastic.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter. That's where you'll find me. Oh, boy. If you didn't like the comments last episode, you won't like my Twitter. But hey, some things are fun. I did tweet out a funny video of a dog giving all its puppies to its owner. Have you seen this? Mm-hmm. It's so cute. The pit bull gave birth to all these puppies, and then it keeps putting all the puppies in its owner's lap.
Really, that's negligent.
But anyway, H-E-N-E-R-U-I-G, that's where you'll find me. I also write for Fandom.com. You can find stuff there. But I'm still part of the Laser Time family through this. And you can find an archive of great stuff I've done on LaserTimePodcast.com. But it's all supported by Patreon.com/LaserTime, where you'll find so many great things, including our upcoming Season 4 special. Mm-hmm. We will also be doing... that's also where the previous season wrap-ups are, and the season one entirety is on there.
Yep.
Patreon.com/LaserTime. Just $5 a month gets you access to that and a bunch of other things.
A bunch of other shows, commentaries. It really helps us out. It helps us do all these other shows, such as LaserTime. This week, hey, you like old pieces of showbiz minutia?
Yes.
This week,
I do.
I went and dug up fucking talk show interviews with Spuds McKenzie and the Where's the Beef Lady to show you life 30 years ago, how big a commercial phenomenon could be.
Spuds fucks now.
It's so implied
it
all
really
the time.
Is,
it's
gross.
Real weird. But check it out. It's all about stupid Super Bowl commercials, but I swear to God, it's more entertaining than I make it sound. We also, like, if you like that kind of thing as well, I got to recommend 30-20-10, our look back 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago to this very week. Like looking at movies, music, TV shows, some news. It's really, really fun. And if you like, a lot of the stuff we bring up here is similar to how we do stuff on... Oh, sorry, the news thing at the beginning. It's like a whole show of that.
Yeah.
And I really want to give a big shout-out to Eric Nagel from the It's Eric Nagel Show
on
Sirius XM. The show is back on Sirius 206, XM 103, weekend, 6 p.m. Eastern and 3 p.m. Pacific.
Did he say he bought Henry and myself dinner?
Yes.
When we were in New York?
I've gotten to meet him a few times now. It's getting old, Eric. But now I've gotten to meet him
in person.
I've gotten to meet him in person in multiple things, but this was the first time Bob got to go with me on a trip. We were in New York.
Being a sick hobbit who has forced to be chained to this goddamn station.
So we met him in Manhattan. He took us out to dinner. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much, Eric.
But I mean, we said it in person, too, I guess.
Yes. We just want people to know how nice he is.
I'm looking, crossing my fingers, I'm looking forward to some really cool stuff we're going to be doing in the near future on Talking Simpsons as well. Mm-hmm. Keep your eyes peeled.
That's a promise. We'll be back next week with Homer's Barbershop Quartet. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Infotainment.
And of course, this episode of Talking Simpsons was executive produced by Josh K. and many other fine patrons at patreon.com/lasertime.